Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Up front next, breaking news. Trump's gatekeeper testifies that she saw Stormy Daniels in Trump Tower. Prosecutors also grilling Cohen's banker, who helped the former president's fixer wire the $130,000 payment to Stormy Daniels. So did prosecutors make their case? Three witnesses today, plus Trump and his allies targeting a top prosecutor in the New York case, accusing him of being a plant for the White House. So who is he? Why is Trump so obsessed with this one individual? And Taylor Swift at the center of a wild conspiracy theory that is spreading like wildfire amongst Trump supporters. A special report ahead. Let's go out front. And good evening. I'm Erin Burnett. And out front tonight, the breaking news, Stormy Daniels in Trump Tower. Trump's longtime assistant on the stand late today. She said she saw Stormy Daniels in Trump Tower, and she testified that she maintained contacts for both Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal for Donald Trump. Trump's longtime gatekeeper, Rona Graff, was in many ways Trump's right hand for 34 years. And this moment on The Apprentice accurately captures her central role in organizing Trump's personal and professional life.
Hi, this is Rona in Trump's office.
He asked me to call you and tell you to meet him tomorrow morning at the New York Stock Exchange.
I can tell you as a reporter, if you needed to reach Trump, you called Graff. Anytime I was at Trump Tower to see Trump when I was a business reporter or on The Apprentice, she was there at her desk at his office door. She came and went from his office at her own whim, and that was unique. She was always formal. He was always Mr. Trump to her, but she had stature and she controlled access to him. In fact, she once told Real Estate Weekly, quoting Rona, "Everybody knows in order to get through to him, they have to go through me." And she told prosecutors she not only remembered seeing Stormy Daniels in the reception area of Trump Tower before Trump ran for office, but that it was, quote unquote, office chatter that Trump wanted Daniels on The Apprentice, something that Daniels actually talks about in her recent documentary.
He said, "You're actually really smart." Somehow the conversation about Celebrity Apprentice came up, and his angle was, "I'll get a lot of attention for putting this blonde adult actress on TV." And I was like, NBC would never let me on television. And that's when he's like, "Every season, I get to pick one person that they can't overrule. It's my wild card."
Now, you know, Graff was not a friendly witness for the prosecution. She remains loyal to Trump. She was only on the stand for about a half an hour. But even in that context, and maybe in that context, what she said today about Stormy Daniels being at Trump Tower and Trump having that contact information for McDougal and Daniels was very important. Also important was another witness on the stand today, the man who actually arranged Michael Cohen's $130,000 payment to Daniels. Gary Farrow worked at First Republic Bank, and he testified that Cohen contacted him just days after that Access Hollywood grab him by the P tape was released. Now, remember, at that time, Trump's campaign was in panic mode, and Farrow testified that at that time, Cohen set up not one, but two LLCs, and the second was called Essential Consultants. It was done on October 26, 13 days before the election. And that's the shell company that Cohen then used to pay Stormy Daniels. And remember, it is that payment and Trump's reimbursement of that payment to Cohen that is at the heart of this criminal case. Paula Reed is out front live outside the courthouse tonight. And Paula, you know, David Pecker, crucial witness on the stand and continued and continued and continued. But then they were able to very quickly move through more witnesses. So where do we stand right now looking into week two?
Good evening, Aaron. Well, in her first week of testimony, prosecutors only really got through one significant witness. Of course, the former tabloid king, David Pecker, who you just mentioned. Then they used their last 2 hours on a Friday to put on these other two witnesses really quickly, mostly to help them just move some exhibits into evidence. But Rona Graff, who you were just talking about, she prompted something we have not seen throughout this entire trial, and that is a genuine smile from a very unhappy defendant.
So we have another day of court in a freezing courthouse. It's very cold in there.
Former President Donald Trump still not warming up to the reality of being on trial in the New York hush money case. Today in court, David Pecker, the former publisher of the National Enquirer, was back on the witness stand, tying Pecker's non-prosecution agreement with federal prosecutors to an agreement he made to sell the National Enquirer, a deal contingent on the investigation into his company being resolved. From a timing standpoint, it would have added onto the stress of the transaction, Pecker testified. They also tried to show how Pecker had other reasons beyond just helping Trump win the White House for running negative stories about Trump's opponents. Pecker testified that his magazine ran stories about Bill and Hillary Clinton prior to the 2015 Trump Tower meeting, where an agreement to help Trump was allegedly breached. Running those stories was beneficial to AMI, Pecker testified. After his testimony wrapped up, prosecutors used the last few hours of the day to call two additional witnesses. The first was Trump's longtime assistant.
Rona, let me have the calls, please.
Rona Graff was a fixture in Trump's office for decades. She testified how, before Trump became president, she was his gatekeeper, keeping close track of his contacts, emails, phone calls, and meetings. She told the jury it was a very stimulating, exciting, fascinating place to be. There is no court on Monday, so on Tuesday they'll likely wrap up with Michael Cohen's banker, and then it's not clear who the next big witness will be. They have not said so publicly. We're also waiting, Aaron, for the judge to issue his opinion about Trump's alleged repeated violations of his gag order. We had a hearing earlier this week about approximately 10 violations. Prosecutors added more later in the week, another hearing scheduled for next week. At this point, it's just unclear what exactly the judge's strategy is by holding out on a decision there.
All right. Thank you very much, Paula, and all of our experts here with me. Jeremy Sand, let me start with you, criminal defense attorney, a former Manhattan prosecutor. So, as I said, you've been in these rooms. So, Rona Graff confirms two contacts she maintained for Donald Trump were Karen McDougal and Stormy Daniels, and that Stormy had been to the office and there was discussion about her being in The Apprentice, which Stormy herself has just said in that documentary clip I played. Did she give the prosecution what they needed from her?
She certainly did, and she did it unwillingly under subpoena. I wouldn't measure her in terms of quantity. I'd measure her in terms of quality, meaning it was short, but it had value. That value corroborates David Pecker. While there's no agreement, for example, there's no emails, for example, understanding how there's a separation, but yet there's obvious communication, puts Stormy Daniels there. It absolutely establishes that foundation that is necessary to move it forward. So very basically, if David Pecker is kind of, I'll use a term, the bread of this, of that sandwich, you know you're going to get Michael Cohen, who's going to be the bulk in that middle, but it's all that other pieces, that other puts it together to make it one story that works and sells and is accurate. They all corroborate each other.
Exactly. And as I said, it doesn't, whether Trump did or did not have a liaison with Stormy Daniels may not be relevant to the case, but it is relevant perhaps to how the jury perceives whether he was wronged and paying. I mean, it's important. And this goes towards that. Bernarda, also criminal defense attorney, former New York prosecutor. Did Rona deliver what you think that she needed, even considering she did not want to be there? She was not friendly.
It was clear to me that she wasn't cooperative, that she did not want to be there. Because, you know, this woman, having worked for Donald Trump for 34 years, she knows the good. She knows the good and the bad of Donald Trump. So she wasn't really wanting to cooperate with the prosecution. But I think, as Jeremy said, the primary goal of getting from her was, one, no emails, and number two, that Stormy Daniels had been in that building. Because now Donald Trump cannot deny that he does not know Stormy Daniels, because you have a confidant, someone that is close to you, someone that you trust, and someone who's reliable and credible before this jury, because she doesn't have an axe to grind, saying that she saw Stormy Daniels inside of that building on the 26th floor where you reside.
Right, exactly. And maintaining those contacts. I mean, you know, those are black and white facts. Now, Jeremy, when you're in the room today, the defense was not given a witness list in advance.
Right.
All right, so they don't know who's coming when. And I'm sure he's sitting there dreading the day of Karen McDougal and cheering for when Michael Cohen walks out there. But nonetheless, what was his reaction when Rona Graff comes out and takes the stand?
Yeah, you know, this was our fourth day of David Pecker's testimony. And from the start, Trump seemed not interested. He was zoned out, I think, for most of it. You know, it was a lot of rehash. And when they called Rona, he perked up. He stood up, he sat up in his chair, he turned toward her. He was actually watching her testimony, unlike with David Pecker. And when his lawyer, Susan Nicholas, started questioning him, he really started paying attention because she started with questions. What did you think of him as a boss? You know, and she said good things to say about him. She worked with him for 34 years. And, you know, his lawyer, she asked, did he respect your intelligence? And when she said, I don't think I would have been there for 34 years if she hadn't, that was like the one time today where Trump actually cracked a smile in court and seemed to be enjoying Rona's testimony. So it was a brief moment, but it was, I think, actually a positive witness for him, at least
he
for that
saw it
purpose.
That way. Was there any reaction in some of these moments that we're talking about when it's Stormy Daniels was in Trump Tower? Any reaction
there
from
really,
him?
You know, there wasn't. And I think it will be interesting to see as this trial goes on and we get to the Karen McDougals and the Stormy Daniels if that continues to be the case. But so far in this first week of testimony, he has not reacted when they brought this salacious stuff up.
All right. Well, so Sue, meanwhile, David Pecker, as part of four days,
yeah,
finishes his testimony. And obviously, you've known him for decades. So the last question asked of David Pecker today was, does David Pecker believe that Donald Trump cares about his family? Right. And there have been a lot of questions about why Trump would do these things. Was it to protect his family? Or as Pecker said, was it for the campaign? But the last question, does Trump care about his family? Pecker replies, quote, of course I do think that Trump cares about his family. That surprised you.
Very much so, because Trump thinks about Trump. And his family, clearly, throughout all this, has almost been window dressing, just so it makes him look like he's a family guy. But his focus has always been, what's best for me? That's why he picks the people he works with, and that's why he's been doing what he's doing with the power play. So the family, for a politician, obviously, it's a necessary optic to have. But his feeling towards them, no, they're just tools for him to advance his own cause.
And so that moment surprised you. I mean, Bernarda, at the end of the testimony of David Pecker, and I guess it's in a sense it's hard to put it together, and it's probably hard for the jury too, right? Because it happened over 4 days, and there was a day off in between. I mean, you know, this was a complicated, you know, it's not as if he just sat there from start to finish. And then, you know, we all learned that you don't just do direct and then cross. You then do redirect and recross. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, this thing isn't 6 weeks. It's going to be 16. But that's another thing. Who did David Pecker help more?
David Pecker definitely helped the prosecution out more because they laid out, David Pecker laid out the foundation. He gave us the background information. And he also changed the narrative. This is not just hush money case. We're talking about the purpose of this money, of killing these stories, was to help this campaign. And you're hearing it from someone that I think was relatable to this jury. I think the jury is going to find him credible, find him believable. So even though he was engaging in these catch and kill schemes and, you know, when we go into the supermarket, we used to see the National Enquirer be like, oh, my God. And now we know how that gets to be the front page of the paper. You got the information that this is exactly how it worked out when it came to Donald Trump and when it came to Michael Cohen. And this is something that I think the jury, in plain terms, are able to digest. In the end, they don't know how to apply this information, but shortly after closing arguments, and they'll ask for read back to get more of his testimony read back, they'll be able to put it all together.
So, Jeremy, when you were, you know, what else stood out to you? You're talking about the difference that you noticed in Trump's demeanor when Rona Graff was testifying as opposed to David Pecker. Was there anything else you noticed? Well, maybe about the jury and their reaction to that.
You know, and I think the last witness we had, Rona had some interesting testimony. She talked about Trump. She talked about Stormy Daniels. And then we went to a banker. And I think then the atmosphere in the room, it dropped another level.
This was Friday at 5 o'clock?
Friday.
You're putting a banker
o'clock
up here?
You know, it was 3 o'clock, but
okay,
it was
yeah, well, court
close
time.
Enough. Exactly, exactly. And so that's where this trial is headed, at least it seems for the next couple of days. You know, the banker, he talked about very mundane regulations. And, you know, eventually we got to how he opened Michael Cohen's bank account. But they were laying the foundation. This is at its heart. It's a documents case. It's got a lot of salacious deals around it. But the prosecution is going to have to take those steps. And so with the jury and with Trump, we're going to see a lot of downtime in the mix with Michael Cohen and Stormy. And
right. You got to mix in a little of the salacious, you know, sex part of the story, right, Jeremy? And then put in what it's about. So to that point, Guy Farrow, the banker, Michael Cohen calls this guy days before the election, sets up this two LLCs, mm-hmm. and uses one of them to pay Stormy Daniels. And the context of the date, of course, is right after that Access Hollywood tape, which just anyone forget. I mean, remember that was when Chris Christie refused to go on a Sunday show and defend Donald Trump, right? This was a campaign in complete free fall at that moment. And this is establishing what the campaign did.
And we've said this 1,000 times, and I know you would agree with me. You don't leave common sense at the courthouse footsteps. You go in, the jury takes that with them, and you're following not the quantity, you're following the quality of that evidence. So now we have Rona Graff, who's giving you the presence, corroborating how things were done in terms of no emails, and setting that foundation. Now you have the banker who says, here are the fake accounts, well, not a fake accounts, but here are the shell companies to move the money to make the payment. It's piece by piece by piece. You can't do this just on the shoulders of Michael Cohen. It dies on the shoulders of Michael Cohen.
Right.
You need everything else around him to lift him up. Otherwise, there is no case.
Right, right. You can't have it on. And I know he has long felt that they were going to do that and that he would say it, but then they would prove it separately from
Michael Cohen to the side. He's critical, but right. You got everything around him.
And Stu, one thing that, you know, as David Pecker's now walked off the stand, men that had been friends, again, we put that in quotes, but friends such that they were friends over decades, they have not spoken since the beginning of 2019, according to Pecker's testimony. So do you think they'll ever speak again? I mean, Trump has said nice things about him this week.
If you look at how once Pecker told his tale that he was required to, he also tried to make friends with Trump again. So more like from The Godfather, it's personal, not business. Hmm. And this is kind of that relationship anyway, so it's a pretty apt description.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you all very much. And next, Trump complaining that New York's criminal trial is keeping him from his wife's birthday tonight.
Be nice to be with her, but I'm at a courthouse for a rigged trial.
Melania Trump's former chief of staff responds next. Plus, I'll speak to the sketch artist who sketched this scene from today's trial. Why she says this moment, and if you look closely at Trump's face, you'll see the intensity there, why it caught her attention. And an incredible report tonight on the wild conspiracy theories that are flourishing among Trump supporters tonight.
You don't believe Taylor Swift is a Gordon Sayle.
I don't know what to believe about Taylor Swift.
This podcast is supported by Sleep Number. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores? Sleep Number does that. Only Sleep Number Smart Beds let you each choose your ideal comfort and support. Your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number smart beds learn how you sleep and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. Temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Breaking news, Donald Trump attacking the case against him and hyping a new 300-page from one of his top allies, Jim Jordan. The GOP claims Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg only charged Trump in the hush money trial due to, quote, political motivations and animus.
We have a report that was just put out by House Judiciary on the District Attorney's Office. This was done by Congress. And so I guess it just came out a little while ago, a few moments ago. I haven't seen it yet. I haven't read it, but it should be interesting.
Interesting. He's carrying it around, as I said, 300-page document. You saw him with that giant binder clip. He had it. It comes as Trump's team is also attacking a key member of Bragg's team, the DA, with past ties to the Biden administration. And Jason Carroll is out front with this special report.
You plan to testify with Trump? Before former President Donald Trump's criminal trial got underway, before a jury was seated, and before the judge's gag order prevented him from making statements about attorneys, court officials, their relatives, and potential witnesses, Trump had already set his sights on this man, Matthew Colangelo, senior counsel to the Manhattan District Attorney and part of the prosecution team trying Trump's criminal case.
This is all from the DOJ. This all comes out of Washington. They're coordinated with the district attorney and the AG.
Trump's pre-gag order tirades against Colangelo center on baseless claims Trump's criminal trial is secretly controlled by President Joe Biden, the White House, and the Justice Department.
His top person, Colangelo and some others, have been placed into the DA's office to make sure they do a good job of election interference.
Trump pointing to Colangelo's past, showing he once served as a senior Justice Department official under Biden before leaving to join the Manhattan District Attorney's Office, which is prosecuting his case. Trump's surrogates have been pushing the same conspiracy theory about Colangelo, with Senator Tom Cotton saying on social media, Joe Biden's former number three official at the Department of Justice left D.C. to help go after President Trump in New York. And Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene promoting the same conspiracy.
Matthew Colangelo should know he faces years in prison. This was planned from the Biden White House and Merrick Garland's DOJ at the highest levels.
During opening statements Monday, Colangelo referred to Trump as someone who engaged in a criminal conspiracy and cover-up. He previously had this to say about his current position. Assisting with the district attorney's focus on financial crimes will promote confidence in the legal system by making clear that the same rules apply to everyone, no matter how powerful. Those who know him describe an attorney who is sharp, strategic, and not easily distracted by critics.
He is meticulously focused on the facts, on the law, and how the law was broken. And this is not his first rodeo with Trump.
Colangelo is Harvard educated, and in addition to previously working in the U.S. Justice Department, he also served as an attorney with the New York Attorney General's office, where he oversaw the investigation into the Trump Foundation, which led to its dissolution. Despite his credentials and no validity to Trump's claims, the falsehood about Colangelo could still stick.
Yeah, it's dangerous because it works. Facts be damned. It's clear that for much of Trump's base, what he says will always be accepted as truth, will always stick. It doesn't matter, for instance, that the Manhattan DA doesn't report to Biden or to the federal government. And the result is diminishing public faith in democracy and specifically the justice system.
Now, in the past, Trump has promoted a number of various conspiracy theories on various topics, including the coronavirus. At one point, you may remember, you tried to make it out that Obama wasn't born, President Obama wasn't born in the United States.
Oh, yeah.
The whole birth certificate thing. He had a thing on climate change, claiming that global warming was a hoax. But when you speak to these experts, I mean, they all basically say the same thing, which is that despite the truth, despite the facts, because Trump is the one saying it, his core, his base, they continue to believe him.
Yeah, this is really incredible when you see that. All right, Jason, thank you very much. All right, well, let's bring in Stephanie Grisham now. She was the White House press secretary for former President Trump and also the former chief of staff for then First Lady Melania Trump. And Stephanie, you told me that Melania is watching this trial very closely. Obviously, today we heard from Rona Graff, Trump's longtime assistant, who had testified that she had contact information for both Stormy McDaniels and Karen McDougal that she maintained for Donald Trump, and that Stormy Daniels had been in Trump Tower. And, you know, we heard David Pecker say that Trump had asked him twice about McDougal, calling her, quote unquote, our girl, referring to her as how is Karen. So how does all of this make Melania Trump feel? I mean, some of this, most of this is new information for her.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure that, you know, exactly what you just said, the fact that he asked about her in the White House, the fact that some White House staff got on the phone with David Pecker to talk about keeping this secret even further. Those were new details to me. And so I know they were new details to her. And I'm sure she's not happy about it. Now, make no mistake, she's not sitting home, you know, crying over this. But, you know, like any woman would be, any married woman or woman in a relationship, it's not fun to hear these details. And I think that the difference between Karen McDougal and Stormy Daniels is that, you know, Karen McDougal hasn't been really out there in the news. She, you know, says they had a year-long relationship, that they exchanged I love yous. And, you know, I don't care who you are, that's never going to be fun to hear.
No. It's humiliating, for sure. And obviously we don't know how closely she is following this, but Trump did complain on his way into court today, Stephanie, about having to be there instead of being with Melania Trump for her birthday. Here's what he said this morning.
I want to start by wishing my wife, Melania, a very happy birthday. It'd be nice to be with her, but I'm in a courthouse for a rig trial. She's in Florida. I'll be going there this evening after this case finishes up, this horrible, unconstitutional case.
Now, he also posted a two-minute video on social media for her birthday, highlighting her time as first lady. And that is what really stood out to you today, Stephanie. How come?
You know, I rolled my eyes when he did that. It was so beyond inappropriate, but yet so Donald Trump, that on the way into a trial where they are talking about alleged affairs, not one but two that he had, that is wishing his wife a happy birthday. She and I talked before about how they actually weren't really birthday people, that wasn't a big deal to either of them, which I think is pretty normal for a lot of married couples that have been together for a long time. And so that was a performance for voters. That was not to her. Mm. Same with this video. That is a performance to try and get voters, to try to get those suburban women and those independents, because, you know, he knows that she's a very, very popular first lady and that she, you know, that people really like her. And this was just a performance for them. It had nothing to do with her. It didn't surprise me at all. I'm sure she rolled her eyes too, because it was just so typical selfish Donald Trump.
All right, Stephanie, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Good to see you.
YouTube.
And next, I'm going to speak to the sketch artist who caught this moment, Trump coming face to face with his trusted longtime assistant. So what was Trump's reaction to her testifying? Plus, breaking news, we've got terrifying video just coming in of a massive and destructive series of tornadoes ripping through the upper Midwest. Neighborhoods leveled, reports of injuries now just starting to come in. We have the latest breaking details coming up. Tonight, a different side of Donald Trump on display in court. Trump at one point growing very animated. He urgently addressed his attorney, who was preparing at this moment that you see on your screen to cross-examine the former National Enquirer publisher David Pecker. Now, this key moment was captured in this courtroom sketch by Christine Cornell, who's been in court every day of Donald Trump's trial, and she is back with me now. So I just showed it on the screen, but you've got the actual sketch here. Oil pastels as you are there. I guess you can hold, or they're just pastels.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry. Okay. So tell me, though, and we'll hold it up here so the camera can look at it, because it's even bigger.
This one?
Yeah.
Okay.
So tell me why this moment really caught your attention.
All right.
Donald Trump and his lawyer, and David Pecker's here on the stand.
Okay. We've been knocking ourselves out trying to get something from the Donald. And it's really tough because it's like watching the moon on the wane, and you just see that little toenail sliver most of the time. That's all you can see of him. Today, in the middle of his cross-examination, Mr. Bove's cross-examination of Pecker, Donald, right after the mid-morning break, practically lunged at him because he wanted to get his attention. He wanted his lawyer to come and sit down so that he could speak to him.
Like physically lunging.
Physically lunged. He reached for him. And then Bove sat next to him, and then he was very animated and very directed, and very much you felt, oh, that's what they're talking about when they say this guy kind of rules the room when he's there. You felt that energy from him. I mean, honestly, he's been practically comatose for the last week and a half.
Right. You've described so many times when he's there, it's, you know,
I look on
his
the monitor,
eyes closed, the listening, eyes but, you know, closed, sort of, like, yeah.
Like this. Well, he's coming to life now, and it's because this man is one of his oldest friends, and they're really, you know, made a lot of mischief together. So,
well, that's amazing. And so you finally got this, and this is today under cross-examination. Mm-hmm. All right. So, how would you characterize his demeanor? I mean, I can see the intensity here. Could you tell the emotion as to whether it was frustration or anger, or was it hard to discern?
You know, it was walking a line a little bit because Pecker was in the room too, not the judge or the jury, but Pecker was looking at him, wanting to make eye contact with him, And Donald looked at him, and Pecker had a look like, you know, gee, old friend, we're still friends, right? I mean, that's what the mood I got from Pecker. And with Donald, I got like, he blew his cheeks out. Like, huh. Oh.
And at this moment, there's no jury, there's no judge. You're saying at this moment, no judge. I mean,
there's no judge, no jury.
Wow. So it really was as personal as a moment could get.
It was a very personal moment. And then after that, it was followed by his personal secretary who'd been with him for 30 years. And he smiled a little at her. And, they, you know, seeing those human contacts is really starting to make a real picture for us.
So Rona Graff was there, right? And at one point she tells the court of him, right? And she said some very damning things. She wasn't there to do that. She was not a friendly witness to the prosecution. But she did say Stormy Daniels and Trump Tower. She said those things. But then they asked her about her relationship with Trump. And at one point, Christine, I'm quoting from the transcript or from what our reporter said, I think that he was fair. And what's the word I'm looking for? A respectful boss to me. Sometimes he would peek his head in and say, go home to your family.
I loved that.
Which I thought was very thoughtful of him. You know, it's funny when she says that. I remember, and I had interacted with her many times over the years, her saying that to me once. He cares about my family, tells me to go home to her family. I actually had heard her say that. I just remembered that now reading this. But how did he react to her testimony?
Well, I mean, basically what she testified to was that there were these, she made these information contact cards for him. So yes, definitely he had a relationship with both of these women. One of them, especially, Carol?
Karen.
Karen,
yeah.
Yeah. They had two different addresses for her, so he'd obviously been following her for some time. With Stormy, it was just a single number.
Just a single number?
Yeah.
And did he seem warm looking at Rona, that there was some sort of a care?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't think he felt like she was betraying him. I think that he's not denying that he had any contact with these people at all. You know, I don't think that's the issue. I think it's much more complicated legal stuff.
Right. You know? Well, Christine, thank you very much. And thank you for sharing this moment. And it's worth emphasizing, as I didn't notice it until you mentioned the omission, that the judge was not there. Mm-hmm. Right? This wasn't a sort of, you know, do this in this instant with the judge, that it was such a personal
moment. No. In fact, when I came in and I saw that and I was watching, I was afraid I was going to miss it if I tried to start to draw. So I just picked up my binoculars and just watched. So I would have it.
In your mind.
Yeah, I thought about whether or not I should have drawn the drawing of him lunging. And then I thought, well, that's kind of like gilding the lily. It's not exactly a story, you know.
Well, it is all amazing. It's also amazing to think about how you look. You know, sometimes when we hear things, we then remember them after, but that you really want to capture it in that instant. All right, Christine, thank you very much.
Good to see you, as always.
And next, how Taylor Swift has found herself at the center of wild conspiracy theories right now spreading among Trump supporters.
Yeah, and they're seeking the endorsement from Taylor Swift, Biden administration. And then, who's going to win the Super Bowl?
And a special report tonight inside Iran, where chants of death to America are now drowning out Friday prayers.
The assignment with me, Audie Cornish.
So there have been arrests, suspensions, disciplinary hearings. They're shutting down graduation events.
At this moment, the part of the protests that are admirable are young people calling attention to atrocities.
Michael Roth is the president of Wesleyan University.
I would like to make a space for them to do that, as long as that space doesn't prevent other people from pursuing their education.
Listen to The Assignment with me, Audie Cornish, on your favorite podcast app.
Tonight, the chilling effect of misinformation. Among the lies, Taylor Swift is a, quote, front for a covert political agenda. Donny O'Sullivan spent months with Trump supporters to uncover the conspiracies that they believe and how quickly they are spreading even now. Here is what he found.
By now, everyone knows Taylor Swift is a government psyop. You don't believe Taylor Swift is a government psyop.
I don't know what to believe about Taylor Swift.
This is Joe Black.
CNN.
That's what we thought.
Yeah.
Are you guys going to cover it, like, accurately?
Or? I met Joe at a Trump rally in Las Vegas back in January.
Put CNN.
Yeah. You don't think it's accurate?
Not really. I think you guys do sound bites.
You think Trump won last time, I take it?
I do firmly believe that there was some election interference.
Enough that it lost him the election?
Absolutely. Right. And all people have to do is a little research to figure it out.
Hello.
Hey, Joe. How you doing?
I stayed in touch with Joe after Vegas. I wanted to find out more about why Joe doesn't trust someone like me, a journalist from the so-called mainstream media. So we went to visit him in Grand Junction, Colorado.
Here we are.
In Grand Junction.
What happened to what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas?
Yeah, why didn't you stay there?
Some guys come home from Vegas with a new bride. You come back from Vegas with a bunch of CNN guys.
Everybody makes mistakes.
So, if you want to find out what's going on in the world just right now, today, what do you do?
I check out different platforms that I feel that I can trust.
One being Telegram.
Telegram is definitely one.
Yeah.
Telegram is a platform first developed in Russia that has very few rules.
This is CNN Breaking News.
All right, we got some more breaking news coming into the Situation Room right now.
The president's Twitter account has been suspended.
I feel like that's an insult to people to not be able to look at information and to discern it themselves. You're basically calling that person stupid.
Telegram surged in popularity after the January 6th attack, when major social media platforms cracked down on conspiracy theories and banned people like Trump and banned some of his supporters like Joe.
But I turned on my phone one day and all of a sudden it's been deactivated.
How does that feel?
It was horrible. I liked Facebook. You know, I got a social marketplace. You can do business, you can find things. So it's like being cut off of a part of life.
So what's a channel you follow on Telegram? If I want to see some of the news for today.
My favorite one, it's called Patriot Memes.
Hey, Taylor.
I visited Joe a couple of weeks before the Super Bowl. It was just as the conspiracy theory that Taylor Swift was helping rig the game to help Biden started circulating online. It was one of the first things that popped up on Joe's feed.
Let's go to something that's like news, though.
Yeah. So this is
from Benny Johnson.
By now, everyone knows Taylor Swift is a government psyop, and this is exactly why corporate media is having a meltdown about it. You don't believe Taylor Swift is a government psyop?
I don't know what to believe about Taylor Swift. It's good to keep your mind open. Could she be? Could she not be?
Because we're a few weeks from the Super Bowl.
Yeah. And they're seeking the endorsement from Taylor Swift.
They are.
Biden administration. Yeah. And then, who's going to win the Super Bowl?
I call that a conspiracy theory, okay?
Sure, yeah.
What I find most difficult to believe about the Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce Super Bowl conspiracy theory is that you think the Democrats could be so organized to pull all this off.
Very organized.
Do you think?
I do, yes.
We're going to get together, as well as rigging the Super Bowl, and Taylor is going to back Biden for president. That's just so much stuff. Like, that is so much organization, but...
Not that hard to do.
You don't think?
No.
Yeah.
Rigging the election, that'd be a lot more complicated.
And Tony, I mean, it's just fascinating and so important that you had that conversation, spent that time getting to know a person. But some of these conspiracies and these lies that you were really tracking down, how they're taking root in people's lives, are corroding trust. How bad is it?
Well, I think you just heard it there in the very last thing that you heard Joe Black say, right? Is that you have this absurd conspiracy theory about Taylor Swift. But millions of Americans have been convinced that the 2020 election was stolen. And if you think about just how vast a actual conspiracy that would need to occur for that to happen, it's huge, right? And so if people can believe, as tens of millions of people do, that the last election was stolen, it's just opened up a world to this alternate reality where Taylor Swift can raid the Super Bowl for Joe Biden.
Yeah, it is. It goes to show you what people can believe and people do believe right now. All right, Doni, thank you very much. And obviously that piece was fantastic and fascinating, but you're going to get to see a lot more of it. Doni has a special episode of the whole story, Misinfo Nation, the Trump Faithful, and you will get to see all of it in full on Sunday night here on CNN at 8 p.m. Next, though, breaking news, potentially catastrophic tornadoes right now leaving a tail of destruction across the Midwest. Entire neighborhoods ripped to shreds, trains derailed, and there are reports already coming in of injuries very early here. We've got the very latest, though. We're going to share with you what we do know coming in. And a rare look tonight inside Iran, where outrage to the United States is reaching a fever pitch. Breaking news, this video is just coming in. This is the massive and destructive tornadoes that have just torn through the upper plains. This is Nebraska. And when you see these images, you can see just how wide. Look at the width of that tornado. This is absolutely gigantic. It's almost like you can't even tell that's what it is. But it is a tornado. There you can see the far right edge. The destruction stretching for as far as the eye can see. Entire neighborhoods are gone. We are now just starting to get reports of injuries. We can't tell you much more about the severity, the numbers, because it is just starting to come in. This video also shows the strength of the storm, which derailed an entire train that you're looking at there. Rescue crews say they are going now door to door looking for people who may be trapped to understand the depth of the damage in Nebraska tonight. Meantime, the Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin is speaking out tonight to Iran, telling Iran to not be too confident.
What the Iranians learn, I'm not really sure, but what they should learn is that, first of all, their systems don't work as advertised.
It comes after Iran's unprecedented attack on Israel. And tonight, our Fred Pleitgen is inside Iran with this rare and important look for you.
Iran's hardliners flexing their muscles, screaming death to America and death to Israel at Tehran's main Friday prayers. The staunchly conservative prayer leader saying the Islamic Republic will not back down.
Iran has warned it will take an even harder line towards the U.S. and towards Israel in the future, saying that if Israel attacks Iran or its assets one more time, the Iranians will strike back from their own territory.
Tensions in the Middle East remain at a boiling point after Iran launched a massive drone and missile attack against Israel in retaliation for the bombing of its embassy compound in Syria, killing several top Revolutionary Guard commanders. Israel, the U.S., and other allies managed to take down most of the Iranian drones and missiles, but Israel then hitting back with a limited strike against an airfield in central Iran. The hardliners flying massive Palestinian flags, ripping into Israel's operation in Gaza and the U.S.'s support for Israel. The message here, Iran is ready for a confrontation. In fact, we are even happy about this, this man says. We are praying day and night for a second and third attack. And he says, we've had these threats for a long time, but the difference is now the people are strong, the IRGC is strong, and the army is strong, and we have strong tools. And this cleric says, if the Islamic Republic of Iran will have more conflicts in the future, it doesn't mean we are warmongering, we're just reacting to the bullies. But on the streets of Tehran, concern the current tensions could escalate and even turn into war. I believe the situation will get worse, this man says, as both sides are more combative, and in my opinion, it will lead to war and to calamity for people. And this woman says, we are definitely concerned, worried, but what can we ordinary people do about it? Iran's leadership says its military is ready for combat, even as they say war is not in their interest. Fred Pleitgen, CNN, Tehran.
And also tonight, the Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, in Beijing, meeting with the Chinese President Xi Jinping. Our Kylie Atwood is there with him, and he spoke to her exclusively about the United States' diplomatic efforts in the Israel-Hamas war. And Kylie joins us live now from China. Kylie, tell us more about your conversation.
Well, listen, Aaron, we had a wide-ranging conversation. We spoke in part about the ongoing Israel-Hamas war, and U.S. officials have said that they believe the way out of this war would be a historic deal that includes normalization of relations between Israel and Saudi Arabia and a clear pathway forward towards a two-state solution between the Israelis and the Palestinians. But they've also said a ceasefire needs to be in place in order for that deal to actually come to fruition. But I asked him if it would be possible to roll out the framework for that deal before there's any ceasefire in place in a way to push ahead towards a halt in fighting. And he appeared to leave the door open to that. Listen to what he said.
We've been clear about what the vision is. And beyond that, we've been working intensely to flesh it out, working with Arab partners, working with European partners on this as well. And I think the more concrete it becomes, and the more it moves from the hypothetical and theoretical to something that's actually possible, that's real, then everyone involved is actually going to have to make decisions and make choices. And so we're doing this work. And we're trying to make it as real as possible so that people do decide.
And maybe share it before a ceasefire is in place?
I think certainly that's possible. We've, again, been actively engaged on this. And ceasefire or not, we'll continue to make these possibilities known. But in order to actually realize this, there's going to have to be an end to the conflict in Gaza. And as I said, there's also going to have to be a resolution to the Palestinian question. Or at least an agreement on how to resolve it.
Now, it appears that is a shift in thinking in the potential order of events to get out of this conflict. But of course, the framework for this potential deal isn't even done yet, and it will be a major hurdle to get all parties to agree to this deal, not the least of which would be Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Aaron?
Of course, has been staunchly opposed. All right, thank you very much, Kylie Atwood in Beijing tonight, and thanks so much to all of you.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.